Welcome to Context and Clarity. I am Chuck.
I am Karen.
I used to be a Democrat.
I used to be a Republican.
I'm still a liberal.
I'm still a conservative, but since our parties left us, we're not really sure what we are. But we do know this. As Abraham Lincoln reminds us, we are not enemies. We are friends.
We're acquaintances, at least. I'll give you acquaintances, Karen. How's your week, Karen? Oh. We haven't done this in a couple weeks. How have you been?
Well, we've been pretty busy with our other podcast, getting it up and going. So it's been hard to try to kind of balance both of them, but I'm sure we'll figure it out at some point. You want to tell everybody about the other podcast in case they want to check that out?
The other podcast is a brainchild of Karen's. It's about spies and...
Spies are cool.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. Yes.
Spies blowing up stuff. And really, really crazy women.
It's awesome. The name of the podcast is Spy Stories, and you can find it anywhere. And we would love it if you would check it out. It has both of us hosting, just like this one. And it's not, we don't require you to like think about serious stuff. So with Spy Stories,
you just enjoy.
Yeah, we wanted one where we weren't arguing all the time and where we could just have fun. So that's what we
do. Tomorrow's the big day. The Mueller report comes out. Do you think that you are going to be in it?
I don't think I am, but you never know. I think between the two of us, you would be the one most likely to be in the Mueller report.
They talked to me like 8 times.
Of course they did. Of course they did.
Now, it's going to be interesting to see, but the redacted, you know, wouldn't it be cool if they release like all 400 pages of just everything redacted?
Do you ever want to just do that? Like highlight or just cross out things in black, just that have no meaning to anything, and disperse it out and to people, and just be like, "I'm sorry, I can't see all of it because it was redacted."
Well, I was in a car wreck one time, and they say your life passes before your eyes, and there were things I just wanted to redact from that.
There's a lot of things I could redact from my life and I would be okay. Well, let's move forward with what we're going to talk about today. So in the last episode, we went over the history of lobbying. And this week, we're going to take a quick look at PACs and what people refer to as dark money. When it comes to PACs, there are several different kinds. We're not talking about like wolf PACs. We're talking about the political PACs, just in case you didn't know.
Political action committees, yes.
Right. There are several different kinds: connected, non-connected, and leadership PACs. Connected PACs are directly connected to a specific corporation, a labor group, or a recognized political party. Non-connected or ideological PACs, they raise and spend money to elect candidates from any political party who might support their ideas or agendas. Non-connected PACs are made up of individuals or groups of citizens not connected to a corporation, a labor party, or political party, and leadership PACs are formed by politicians to help fund the campaigns of other politicians. Politicians can create leadership PACs when they're trying to prove party loyalty or to further their goal of being elected to a higher office later on. Now, there have been attempts to restrain PAC spending, and they work when a PAC is registered and reporting. When everything is transparent and it goes by the rules, the funding is known as hard money. Hard money donations include disclosures, limitations, and open coordination. But unfortunately, most interest groups have found ways around all that, and their funding is known as dark money.
Yes, and let's talk about dark money a little bit, Karen. It is outside spending, also known as soft money or independent spending. That refers to political expenditures made by organizations and individuals other than the candidate campaigns themselves. All outside groups that aren't official parties, with the exception of a few traditional PACs that make independent expenditures, are allowed to accept unlimited sums of money from individuals, corporations, or unions. With these donations, groups can engage in a number of direct political activities, including buying advertising that advocates for or against a candidate, going door to door, running phone banks, things like that. Now, however, these organizations are not allowed to coordinate their spending with political candidates or parties. While some outside groups, like super PACs, are required to disclose their donors, others are not. These non-disclosing organizations are referred to as dark money. Now, we're just going to touch on this today because there's much more to it, and it would take way too much time to sift through all the legislation that led to the churn on dark money and the attempted legislation to try and stop it. Our goal for the moment is to just try to explain what it is.
Dark money is routed through several different means. The 501c3 groups, and those are organizations that operate for religious, charitable, scientific, or educational purposes. They're really not supposed to engage on any political activities except for certain voter registration programs. However, several groups get around this in the name of voter education and voter education grant programs. Donations to these organizations are tax deductible. Some of the well-known groups that fall into this category include the NAACP, the Center for American Progress, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Center for Responsive Politics.
Now you have your 501c4 groups, and these are the social welfare organizations. They can engage in political activities as long as these activities do not become their primary purpose. The IRS has never defined what primary means or how a percentage should be calculated, so the general rule of thumb is 49.9% of all expenditures. So if you're under 50%, you pass. A limit that some groups have found easy to circumvent through elusive or manipulative reporting. Donations to these groups are not tax deductible. And some of the more well-known groups include the NRA, the National Rifle Association, Planned Parenthood, and Sierra Club. Then you have the 501c5 groups, Karen. There's a lot of 501c's here.
There are.
These are labor and agricultural groups that may engage in political activities as long as they adhere to the same general limits as the 501c4s. Now, donations to these groups are not tax deductible either. And the well-known groups that fall under this are the Service Employees Union and the American Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Right. And then you have your 501c6. I know that's shocking, but yeah. The 501c6 organization. This encompasses business leagues, chambers of commerce, real estate boards, and boards of trade, which can engage in political activity, which just like 4 and 5, they can't go over half. Donations to these groups are non-tax deductible. The most well-known groups include the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Medical Association, and pharma.
We need to get us one of these 501c's, Karen. Now, the benefits of being a 501c political nonprofit include operating without incurring tax liability, masking true political intent through non-disclosure, taking donations from people and corporations that they don't want knowing their political stance, and the ability to disclose financial activity long after it's taken place. Then you have the super PACs, Karen.
Right.
These are like PACs on steroids. Now, technically,
they are not PACs with capes.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Not all heroes wear capes, though, Care.
And not everyone who wears a cape is a hero, but that's completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, technically known as independent expenditure committees, super PACs may raise and spend an unlimited amount of money and accept contributions from companies, nonprofits, unions, and individuals. Now, since super PACs cannot give money directly to the candidates, they're exempt from the limits on fundraising and spending that regular PACs must abide by. Super PACs may raise and spend an unlimited amount of money and accept contributions from companies, nonprofits, unions, and individuals. Although often portrayed as free from donor identification, Super PACs must actually identify their donors to the FEC, making them public. They must do so on a monthly or semi-annual basis in non-federal election years and a monthly in the year of an election. So in that sense, they're quite transparent, except when the donor is a shell corporation or a nonprofit that doesn't disclose its donors. In these cases, again, they're dark money groups.
Right, and then you have the hybrid PACs, also known as carry committees. They are a hybrid PAC that isn't affiliated with a candidate and has the ability to operate both as a traditional PAC, contributing funds to a candidate's committee, and as a super PAC that makes independent expenditures. So to do so, carry committees must have a separate bank account for each purpose. The committee can collect unlimited contributions from almost any source for its independent expenditure account, but may not use those funds for its traditional PAC contributions.
Then let's get into Karen Limited Liability and shell companies and their role and how they work in here. Now, limited liability companies perform a number of necessary business functions, but their unique structure can easily be abused and manipulated. In politics, LLCs are often established to help disguise the identity of a donor or the source of money spent on behalf of a political candidate.
Right. LLCs are governed by state law, but generally, only minimal information is necessary to file the required articles of incorporation. While most states require the LLC name, address, and a registered agent or founding member, in Delaware and in a few other states, an LLC can be incorporated without even having to name a registered agent, which is just insane.
There are dissenters, such as the Institute for Free Speech, ran by Bradley Smith, the former chairman of the FEC. He was appointed by Clinton and opposed by Gore for his anti-campaign finance reform stances. They say that the ability to donate anonymously is essential to a free society. Now, some hard right groups say that the term dark money was coined by progressives who were angry about the Citizens United decision. But the term actually originated from the Sunlight Foundation, which is a nonpartisan group confirmed by SourceWatch.
Right, because I look
confirm that one.
Yeah. Right, you have to go through SourceWatch to find out. I mean, when you're looking at foundations, SourceWatch is a really good place to tell you who's involved with the foundations and where they came from and things like that. So SourceWatch did confirm that the Sunlight Foundation is nonpartisan.
And they coined the term during the 2010 midterm elections while describing undisclosed donations provided to campaigns.
So when you look at all of this, here are my thoughts. I actually think that society has driven some of the rise of dark money contributions by the way that we demonize opposing political candidates. Where a company owner used to be able to defend their political choices by just explaining how a candidate might be good for their business, they now have to defend every social stance that a candidate does or doesn't take. So people will demonize a company and say that their beliefs are exactly like that of the candidate. And there's just a lot more consequences for it than there ever have been before. Social consequences that may not even be fair or relevant. So I think that we've kind of created the problem. I mean, obviously there's been legislation that has created the problem, but there's also been society. There's been some societal problems that are just making it worse.
See, and I kind of disagree with you there a little bit.
I just want to say, you know, I think a lot of donors, they would not feel like they have to lend their support in the shadows if they were more comfortable walking in the light. But we've made it very, very difficult to do that. And I also want to say quickly that I think transparency is vital when a special interest group is donating such massive amounts that they essentially buy influence, right? I mean, obviously, we need to have it limited to where special interests aren't basically buying candidates. So I personally am much more concerned with limiting campaign contribution amounts than I am knowing who donates where. And that doesn't, I'm, the exception to that is if we're talking about foreign related donations. Unfortunately, I do think it's necessary to ensure countries or groups that support countries with less than honorable intentions or could be a danger to our country, they should not be able to influence our elections. So we have to know about those contributions.
And that's a reality of where we stand. Without transparency and with these, with shell companies and LLCs and things like that, the reality is we don't know how much China and Russia are donating to campaigns.
Right.
I mean, that's just the truth of it. And I think more than anything, see, I'm not even worried about the, I would like to see the limits, something done with the limits. But I think more than anything, we need true, complete transparency. And you know what I think actually we, and I've heard this mentioned before, but you know what I really think we should do?
What?
I think officials should be like NASCAR drivers. You know, I mean, people like Cory Booker, not anyone knows that he takes a lot of money from the pharmaceutical industry. You know, so he should have to come to work with a big Pfizer patch on his suit. They can all wear flags on their suits. You can wear a Pfizer thing on your suit if you're taking all kinds of pharmaceutical money.
Mm-hmm.
Because money is speech. You know, the courts have said money is speech. And you and I are just whispering while Amazon and GE are yelling. So who do you think is going to be hurt? And the reality is, you know, with Citizens United, to change that, you'd need a constitutional amendment now because you'd be overturning a Supreme Court decision.
You could limit the scope, but go ahead.
Where the limits are going to come, it's mm-hmm. going to start in the states. It's already started in some of the states.
Right.
So where the true change is going to come, and if you look at a lot of campaign finance reform initiatives, there are some really, really interesting ones there. And, you know, I seen one that said that they proposed that you can only, if you're donating money, it can only be used in the state that you're headquartered in. So if, say you're like General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
If you're donating, just say, $10 million to candidates mm-hmm. or to the Republican fund, whatever, mm-hmm. you can only spend that money in Michigan. That's kind of it. I mean, there are so many different ideas floating out there that we can certainly come up with something better than we have.
Right. We can definitely look at things. And I just think there's going to need to be a balance between private citizens being able to donate without fear of repercussion just based on whatever is socially popular at the time. There has to be some balance there. But there's no doubt that it all really does come down to some type of campaign finance reform. It is just, it's simply necessary if we ever want to get to a place where the public believes in the process of government again.
I agree with you there. I do disagree with you. I think that companies, if they want to put their money behind a candidate, they have a lot of power and they have a lot of money.
See, you weren't this was the end. You were supposed to say your line. You were not supposed to argue with me again.
I just want to say, I think that if companies want to throw their money behind a candidate, there can be consequences to that.
I believe that there can be consequences, but I think that sometimes those consequences are socially reactive and that I think there's a little bit more to it than that. And I think that if a company loses business because of it, that's one thing. When homeowners are being stalked or whatever, like if you know who your neighbor supported and you start abusing that neighbor because of it, you know, I mean, there has to be a certain level of privacy and that we have in this process when we decide to
your privacy to support is a candidate. When you vote. You get privacy when you donate to candidates.
I believe if we limit it, it doesn't really matter as much because there isn't going to be as much influence or power. If you limit the campaign donations and nobody's able to give more than a certain amount, then who gave it becomes much more irrelevant.
No, so. That's certainly, but unfortunately, we're going to need a constitutional amendment to limit anything. Because of the Citizens United thing.
As I summed up this script with, it all comes down to campaign finance reform. So we have to get to a place where people start believing that things are going to work again. So this time, why don't you actually say what you're supposed to say and not argue with me? How about we try that?
I didn't think I was arguing with you. I just wanted to make a point that I think
yes, the last point that you always have to do.
Accountable for if a company... If General Mills is donating to a candidate or whoever, then
but you had already made that point. So I think you just wanted to have
tonight. We need to record earlier.
You just need to not try to have the last word.
See,
you like
this,
to do this to me, don't you?
No, yeah. I don't. I'm just playing off of what you said. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disrupt you and disturb you so bad. You're a wee bit of a snowflake. And for now, that is all we have to say about that.
Ooh, Chuck Walters, you are something. Okay, but we are friends, I promise. Despite how it might seem right now, we are friends. I don't know how much longer he wants to be my friend with this kind of behavior, but... Yeah, it's all right. We want to thank all of those who take the time to listen to our show and those that share it on social media. We would really love you to find us and join our conversation on Facebook at Context and Clarity Podcast Group. You can also find us on Twitter at Clarity Context.
We would also like to thank our Patreon supporters. We absolutely could not do this without you because Karen spends a fortune on subscriptions and researching things. So
I like
thank you
facts.
Very, very much.
I like facts.
Well, then why don't you use them instead of just giving me your crazy opinions?
All right. On that note, bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.